Welcome to this podcast produced by Imagine, your resource for early childhood music therapy. Imagine is produced by Della Vista Publisher and can be found on the web at www.imagine.musictherapy.biz. The title of this podcast is Color-Coded Success and features Miriam Tart in an interview with Alex Ruffner.
Hello, I'm Alex, the assistant editor of Imagine Magazine. Welcome. Thank you so much for joining me today on this Imagine podcast. As music therapists, we know that when we think outside the box, we can create successful music experiences for children of all ability levels. And this year's Imagine podcast series, we would like to find out how you, Miriam, make music accessible to young listeners, what kind of adaptation you make or assistance you give, and in which ways this support transforms the participation and engagement of your clients. So here are 10 questions for you. First, where do you work and what is your role?
Well, hello, first of all, and thank you for having me. I work at Piedmont Music Therapy, which is a private practice in Charlotte, North Carolina. And I am a music therapist on staff there. So that is my role. And being at a private practice, I work with a wide range of clients, from early childhood individual sessions to groups at preschools, to teenagers, adults with mental health diagnoses, and individuals with intellectual and developmental delays as well.
Awesome. So what everyday situation comes to your mind when you hear about adaptive music making in early childhood settings?
Yeah, the first thing that popped in my head was what I use frequently is just like pre-tuned instruments, instruments with alternative tuning, like ukuleles, guitars, adapted mallets with larger handles or straps, and then also color-coded instruments and music, which, you know, xylophones, glockenspiels, all of those fun things, boom whackers. My most recent example of using adaptive music making kind of in a clinical setting was actually for preschoolers. We had glockenspiels, which was great. And we had color-coded dots on them. So we used stickers. And then we just use circles for the melodic line to play melodies of familiar children's songs, you know, Wheels and Bustle, McDonald's, all those fun ones. So that is kind of what first came to mind was a very recent last week example for adaptive music making.
Nice. Do you ever do music making in kind of like non-traditional environments, or is it mostly like in a classroom setting or
thing? Yeah, I mean, I would say traditionally, yes, for the most part, it's mostly classroom. We also do at PMT, we do a lot of community music making as well. So my most recent example is actually a program through our county, and we were at a library and then a recreation center. So we had family members in the community, kids with disabilities, was kind of young families was kind of our target. And people signed up and were able to come to this free program, which was really great. And then they also received the instruments as well. So so I would say, I guess that's kind of non-traditional in the music therapy world, to do more like that community setting, in a library space. And that was pretty fun. But yeah, we do a lot of community. I love to be outside. I would say that's more of a non-traditional setting, but you know, being winter, we haven't been able to do that a lot recently, but more natural environment sounds and everything.
That was one of the things that I loved about the pandemic was everything got pushed outside automatically. And I was like, I love this. Let's do class outside all the time.
Yeah, it is so fun, especially with young children who love and need to be outside anyways. So it's great.
So in what way can adaptive music making support access and a sense of belonging for young children?
I think there are a couple angles to this one. One being, when someone allows space for a need that I have, I was thinking about this personally, that I have to be included in a group, like accommodations for some reason, there is an innate sense of worth and belonging that I feel. and just being thought of in that way. And young children may not have that awareness overtly, but that sense of being thought of and cared for your particular needs, I think is something that can go such a long way for rapport building, helping to build a sense of self-esteem, self-worth in a young child, or really anyone. Like I said, I was thinking of it for myself too. And secondly, I think the success-oriented experiences really helps to build interest, engagement, and again, self-esteem, really. For a young child to be handed an instrument that they can quickly and successfully play, there's this immediate sense of accomplishment, like, I did it, like, I could do that. And I'm thinking particularly, too, of groups where I've had children at various ability levels to all play a song together. Like, for instance, like on Preaching Ukulele or something. There's various ways that each child will adjust to make it challenging for themselves, right? Like they may all be handled the same instrument, but like depending on what level they're at, they will adapt themselves to like, I can strum, this is hard. Or, you know, one person may be like just picking at one string. So they will kind of adapt to, I found, to a level that meets their ability. And they're still playing the song together too, which is so cool. So everybody gets a bit of challenge, but overall it can lead to success in group music making.
That's great. I love how you kind of brought up the idea that children like to challenge themselves. So, you know, it's like, I feel like we don't ever have to worry about things being too easy, because they will figure out a way to make it more difficult if they want to.
They will. They'll be like, ooh, can I play this ukulele upside down?
Yeah. That certainly would make it a little more difficult. Do you have any tips about how to adapt instruments or music lessons to kind of ensure that the student has a successful experience?
Yeah, I would say mostly of what I've used has been, you know, adapting instruments with like pre-tuning strings. I will also mention this has been primarily I've used for older kids, but teens and stuff, but the chord buddy is a great one to put on a guitar to make it really a guitar really accessible for young children. And then also just, you know, grouping instruments by color, using visuals with those colors on them when it's their turn to play, simplifying just like to a root of a chord to play along with the song. And then the physical as well, like adapted mallets, bigger mallets, using Velcro to hold things to wrists if hands are challenging. So I would say for just instruments, those are the main ways. And then regarding music lessons, I don't often teach adapted lessons to very young children, but typically my adapted lesson students, I found that approaching adapted lessons, music lessons, which is, I think attitude is a big, like perception and expectation, having a very relaxed attitude of the idea that the progress is the point of the lesson. It's not performance. So that idea of like, while we are in our lesson, you're not here to perform your music to show me the progress you've made. We're here to work on the music together, can be really helpful. So if we're working like on voice, I do voice, guitar, ukulele, and piano, are the main ones. And then, you know, using visuals, things like Hoven and Sphere for breathing, and then again, color coding music for piano, I found on the keys, putting stickers on the keys, and then matching those with color coded lyrics or dots or notes themselves being color coded, has been helpful for me.
That's great. I love how you mentioned that sometimes the adaptation that we have to make is our own mindset, or like the student's perception of how the session's going to go, you know? It's not necessarily like something physical we have to do with the space or with the instrument, but more it can just be about how we're thinking about the process, and that can be what's adapted.
Yeah, and I think that can be the client can have so much more success in those settings when you're not it's not like a pass or fail thing, like, oh, you didn't practice three times at home this week, so that's it. We're just going to talk about that. You know, it's like, no, the idea is you're here. We're going to work on the music together while you're here, and we'll see what we can come up with. And that can be help them be more successful overall.
So you already mentioned this briefly, but which non-standard music notation is a good option for young children?
I would just say the most I've used is just color coding. Just like for children who are not yet reading, just using like circled dots. And again, playing just chords along with songs rather than the melody can really simplify things a lot.
So how do you adapt songwriting for young children? Is that something you've done often?
I would say sometimes. yes. Again, kind of visual. So it kind of depends on where the child is at. Kind of going two ways. One, very structured, have maybe visual options of fill in the blank for songs, of like images of maybe the topic we're talking about, several options. So that could go one way with songwriting. Or the way that I would go, which is kind of my favorite, is kind of like the word web, word association. Like if we have an idea of a song, if we're writing, you know, a song about sharing, I'll just kind of have them come up with ideas on their own and write those things down to come up with general ideas. And then I will share kind of like, do you like this? Yes or no? Like this lyric? Yes or no? Something like that.
So what is your top advice for adaptive music making in the early childhood setting?
Be flexible and creative, knowing that sounds will probably not always be perfect. And still, it can be so successful and beneficial to children who are participating and involved in that music making.
So what resources do you recommend? Do you have anything specific?
There have been a couple of like color-coded songbooks I've used, one being an adapted songbook written by Katie Myers. It's called Painting the Piano. I've used that for a lot of adapted lessons and for songs and therapy sessions with young children. It's on Music Therapy eBooks. That's, I think, where we purchased it. I've used her method kind of just like color coding lyrics in a lot of other songs, like pop songs and stuff, requests that I've had. Another one, Music in Motion, has a color coded songbook that has like the melodies that are color coded, which is a little bit more advanced, but can be helpful because they also have boom whacker like chords. So if you're looking for like even for yourself of how to organize it, it's like, oh, quick, the colors are right there, easy to access, even if you're translating it some way to the kids rather than having them read the music. It's a great reference for like what chords are there and everything.
Well, Miriam, thank you so much for sharing your insights. We're excited for everyone to hear about all of these little nuggets of wisdom that you have.
Well, thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for listening to this Imagine podcast produced in 2023.